So I'm Jeff Heck. I'm the CEO at Mayheck. I'm also a physician and still seeing patients. One of the things we've done, I think, that's really important is we've reached out with a survey that we're doing in collaboration with UNC and the Shep Center, but the survey is coming out of Western North Carolina, where we're surveying all the primary care practices, urgent cares, minute clinics, all of the providers that are the frontline providers for healthcare and for the multitude of problems, including COVID-19, that people come in for. We have preliminary data from the first 75 practices, and we're looking at a couple of things. Some of the things that we've discovered is of the practices so far, 50% have enough personal protective equipment, so gowns, gloves, masks, to evaluate respiratory patients for the next 2 weeks. If you stretch that out to 4 weeks, only 25% say they have sufficient PPE. We also know that many of the practices are implementing telehealth, but the complexity of billing and coding is really difficult, so we are holding daily live seminars called Echoes for practices around the region to help provide guidance and education around the implementation of telemedicine. And it's really important because what we've also discovered is that across the region and actually across the state and across the nation, the visits to primary care physicians are down about 30%. What that means is that, you know, primary care practices in particular operate on a very narrow margin, and they make all of their income in the last 25% of their net collections, which means that if they are down 30%, they're losing money to keep their doors open. So as you might expect, primary care offices are closing their doors because they can't keep them open. And that's the last thing that we need right now. We are in such a situation where if we actually get a surge of patients and we're actually able to start testing more, then primary care is going to be at the forefront of this. And we have to have primary care offices open in every county doing the same work that they've been doing and more. So the economic crisis has not just hit the restaurant business and hotels, which it has severely, but it also is hitting the primary care offices.
Is that based on the survey? And is there a number, how many primary care offices maybe in Western North Carolina that have reported closing?
There have been closings. And let me also say that on our survey, we have a hot button. The survey is actually being conducted by furloughed medical students. So they're smart people asking the right questions and engaging in conversations. When they get up, the hot button pushed is for an urgent problem that the practices would like some help immediately. And unfortunately, so far, a significant percentage of the hot button pushes have been, we need some help with understanding what are the best small business loans and how do we talk to our employees about furloughing and what are the employment laws, the changes in the employment laws, how can our employees be made whole if we furlough them. So these are really significant problems, and we're finding that the financial ones may be the biggest ones.
Do you think that this is more pronounced here in Western North Carolina? I mean, do you have any idea of how Western North Carolina stacks up against the rest of the state?
Well, Western North Carolina and Eastern North Carolina are two parts of the state where the majority of our payer mix, about 75%, is Medicare or Medicaid, which pays lower than the commercial payer. So the margins, the squeeze, the financial squeeze on primary care has always been higher. So yes, I would say that we are disproportionately affected compared to other parts of the state. And Helen, I'd also mention that we've also looked at dental offices. So 2 weeks ago, the American Dental Association made the recommendation, strong recommendations, that dental offices only see emergency patients. The problem with that is that's only about 10 to 20% of what most dental offices see. So the business model for them is also not there. So we did a survey of all the dental practices last week to see what's happened as a result of that. So we found that not only have most of the practices closed to everything but emergencies, but a large percentage of the practices, including 100% of the practices in three of the counties, have completely closed their offices to everything, even emergencies, because there is no way to make the model work. We have a paradoxical challenge, and in fact, I would argue in many ways, right now, the economic challenge is the bigger one than the pandemic challenge. Of course, the pandemic challenge is the very thing that caused it. But the unintended consequence of having patients being fearful about coming into their physicians' offices is that it also is adversely affecting the workforce that's going to be needed to care for those people. I would say that we still are very supportive of the social distancing guidelines and believe that it's actually helping to change the curve. I think that's true, but there are still people that need to be physically seen and cared for. And I would say, from our estimation, the offices are safe. They're certainly safer than the grocery stores. We've been very diligent, always have been diligent about keeping the offices cleaned. And the diligence has increased significantly, I think, among all of our colleagues compared to what it was even just 3 weeks ago.
When you get this information from this survey, you get those hot button responses, you're hearing dental offices closing, primary care physicians worry they can't make it. Where does that information go? I mean, to the state, to Health and Human Services? What is going to happen with this survey result?
So we're working with all of our partners across the state. In fact, the survey was funded by the Buncombe County Department of Health and Human Services. We're sharing the data broadly. We're putting the data up on our website. We're sharing it with state officials, with anybody who wants to see it. But we're also acting on it. So when those hot buttons are pushed, we are immediately doing what we can. In some cases, like, for example, help with small business loans, we answered those needs as quickly as we got them, so within a day. There are some that are really more challenging for us. For example, the personal protective equipment that offices need, not only do they cost money, but they also are in short supply. So the supply chain is yet to catch up with some of our critical needs, which would be personal protective equipment for healthcare providers, but also many of the offices wish we could test more broadly. Testing capability for rapid testing is about somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks out nationally. So we still have some need to catch up. And appropriately, the testing capability that we do have is the first priority. It are really the hospitals and those who are really working directly with known patients that are infected with COVID-19, and that's primarily in our hospitals. But we need to test. And the logic is really clear. We have basically, from the stay-in-place guidelines that are both national, state, and local, they're the right guidelines. The problem is we don't really know when we can turn the economy back on, and when people can go back to work, and when we can get engaged again. And the only way we really know that is safe is when we can run thousands of tests a week to determine who's infected, who has immunity, who is safe to return to work. Those are things that we must know. We must know where we are on the curve, so to speak. And I liken this lack of knowledge as it's like driving up in your car to the train tracks, and the gate goes down, the light flashes, and zoom goes the train, and we're wearing a blindfold and we have earplugs in. And we know there's a train because we saw it coming, but we don't know when it's gone. So we don't know when it's safe to drive across the tracks yet. And we'll know once we can take the blinders off and the earplugs off, we'll have more information to know whether it's safe to return.
If it's going to be a month to 6 weeks before perhaps rapid testing is available. What will this region look like at that time? And will primary care physicians and other healthcare providers, including, you know, dentists and others, still be strong enough to keep it going?
Well, we hope so. I think there's some real hope that the stimulus, that the emergency package from the federal government and from our own state will be sufficient to allow people to hold off and resume activities as soon as that capability is there. You know, American ingenuity is incredible. The flurry of activity going about to produce gowns and gloves and testing kits are enormous. It's enormous how much work is going on to make these things happen quickly. Johnson & Johnson has committed to developing a vaccine by September. That would be record speed. That would be an incredible timeline to meet. But if they meet it, it would be extraordinarily important because it might be able to mitigate against a second wave that we would anticipate of the virus in the fall. We think that if the coronavirus that we're seeing now is like the four common coronaviruses that we have seen for decades as causes of the common cold, we've known those have existed. Those four viruses actually are seasonal viruses, and they almost disappear in the warmer months. And then when the fall comes back up, they come back. That's certainly true with influenza. It's true with many viruses. And, you know, the most knowledge that anybody has about this particular virus is 12 weeks old. So there's a lot of great science going on across the world to determine whether this is going to act like a seasonal virus, and it'll give us a reprieve so that we can develop and widely distribute vaccines, or whether it's going to just keep marching on through the summer. We hope and pray that it will be like other seasonal viruses.
The April 22nd sort of first peak, first surge, does that seem to be correct when it comes to North Carolina, Western North Carolina?
I think that's correct. And you know, thanks to the early response of our community for adhering to social distancing, physical distancing really is the proper term now, has probably done more good than anybody can imagine. There's some indications that we might have much less of a surge than we have feared, but time will tell. We're hopeful.
Your final thoughts as a provider, because you're still seeing patients. What is it like for you? What is life like for you now?
Well, this is what I signed up for when I became a physician 40 years ago. I can remember in 1982, I was working in a mission hospital just outside of Nairobi, Kenya, and we were taking care of people with chronic wasting disease. We didn't know what that was. Well, it turned out to be the very beginning of the HIV epidemic that swept through the world shortly thereafter. But we knew that there was some unknown disease that was going on. We knew that people were getting sick and dying, but none of us ever questioned whether we should go to work every day. None of us, you know, it never crossed my mind that I should stay home and protect myself. I mean, this is what it means to be a physician.